now I know we don't have to appeal to audiophiles like you with 180 grams.
No, I will say though, man, a good hype sticker goes a long way with me. Hello and welcome back to the Ear Fuel Podcast. As always, I'm Joel Freemark, and you can follow me on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru. The podcast is always available in the iTunes and Google Play stores under Ear Fuel and at GetEarFuel.com. Today is part three in my series on vinyl, and we've already covered the history of the medium, as well as that unending battle between analog and digital. So this week, I'm going to dig into the actual culture of vinyl, why people like myself love buying it, how to best approach the record store, and my thoughts on 180-gram vinyl and the resurgence in vinyl in general, all sorts of stuff. I have a very special guest with me for that, but first up, a quick album review. The album I want to check out today is the brand new release from The Descendents, and it's called Hypercaffeum Spazinate. First things first, The Descendents are one of the greatest and most important punk bands ever, and rarely a week goes by that I don't blast their 1982 debut album, Milo Goes to College, in full. I love this band. That being said, this is their first new music in 12 years, and as I tend to do with any band who took that long a break or sort of time off, I was very hesitant to jump on the hype train with this one. Now, the first question we have to address, well, it's sort of a question of age, as these guys are all into their 50s, and to be honest, punk rock is very much a young man's game. Most of the time when this sort of situation presents itself, the members have missed a few steps, the songs lack the speed and punch you need, and just things like that. It's not up to par with what it should be. In the case of The Descendents, that is not at all true. These songs hit from every angle, and they have a fury and a power on par with bands half their age. But with The Descendents, you get an honesty and an integrity miles beyond anyone else. That's actually my favorite part of this record, the lyrics, which is not surprising. Milo Ackerman really outdid himself on this album, hitting everything from the over-medication of our youth, to perseverance in the face of adversity, to, well, to food allergies, to be honest. And that's one of the things I've always loved about this band. Nothing is off limits, and they're able to step back and have some fun from time to time. They don't have to be super serious and make every single song some life-changing experience. They remember what it's like to go to a show, and sometimes you just need a mindless, fun rocker. And these songs are gonna go off hard at shows, seriously. The riffs are fantastic, the drumming, well, I mean, it's Bill Stevenson who's beyond a drumming icon, and he still kills it after more than three decades of drumming in the punk scene. I will say, however, that this album is not perfect. There are a handful of songs I could do without, like Without Love and On Paper, and the album closer, it's a bit more than cliche, but since these guys are pioneers of a sound, I suppose they've earned it. My favorite tracks are definitely Full Circle, Victim of Me, and by far, the song Limiter. I love that. It's the best damn track on this record. Well, at least for me, and it is. It is a great, great song. Also, there's a really cool thing that happens here, as you're going to hear elements of bands like Bad Religion and Goldfinger and tons of other West Coast punks. But see, it's really the other way around when you think about it. That is to say, you're hearing the band that was their influence. And you can really hear how much of their sound came from The Descendents and how important they were to other bands. And you really don't get that very often. All in all, I dig this album. It's great to hear The Descendents back in action and setting the bar for bands that refuse to tone it down, slow it down, or release anything short of outstanding, full-throttle tunes. If you're looking for another great album to blast this summer for whatever you're doing, go check this one out and enjoy. Moving on, I am a huge fan of vinyl records. I love the big art, the sound, and honestly, I just kind of love hanging out in record stores. Really, there's an energy there that you can't find elsewhere. So my plan for this week was to spend time discussing how I approach buying vinyl, the ins and outs of it, the good and bad, vinyl culture in general, what makes for a great record store, all sorts of things. But when I mentioned it to someone, they felt there were a ton more unanswered questions that they had and sort of decided to, well, kind of interview me about vinyl instead. Now, this person has to deal with my vinyl buying habit more than anyone else and has a very unique vantage point, both personally, as well as the fact that she runs a record label, among other things, at her job. So sit back and fall deep into the world of vinyl buying as I discuss my obsession with none other than my wonderful and very, very patient wife, Dara. Yeah, we can just talk about my vinyl obsession. It's fine. We can just jump right in.
I'm so over it.
I'm aware you're over it. I mean, your number one concern when you bought the new vinyl storage system was, will this be big enough to make it through the end of the year?
Yeah, I'm still very concerned about that. You didn't even
think there was going to be enough room in it as I was stacking records.
I know. And as I'm looking over there and seeing about 0 inches on the top left, maybe three inches on the top right.
You can get probably 5 or 6 in the first thing. You could get probably
you can
15.
Squeeze all you want into Here, those. And here's you the other won't thing be able is, to dig through them.
In the bottom right, those are just a bunch of 45s that I could move wherever. Those 45s I can deal with at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
Those don't have to be there. There's also a couple of 10-inch records in there, I think. I think I have a record from this band as a pipe, or this bike as a pipe bomb. And then I have the Clash's Black Market Clash 10-inch. There's a couple.
I mean, we could just go through that forever, but that's not why we're here.
I thought we are here to talk about my record collection.
A little bit, but I think the whole purpose was to talk a little bit about how you buy vinyl and the special creature that you are.
I am.
Yeah. Yes. So I think I might already know the answer to this question.
Okay.
But tell me a little bit about your favorite place, your favorite record store.
Well, you see, the thing is, in New York City, a lot of people have been bemoaning it for years that all of the really great record stores have been closing down, and that's very, very true.
Other Music recently?
Other Music closed at the end of June, and that one broke my heart. But I'll say this, and I've said this before, Other Music is not a place I went to buy records. Other Music was a place I went to buy music, as in CDs and new stuff, and they were amazing at it. Their selection of kind of out there, very different stuff, other music, if you will, was second to none in this city, and that's why they're going to be so sorely missed. I actually don't think I ever bought vinyl at Other Music. Ever.
You bought CDs there?
I bought CDs there.
In the last 6 years?
I bought a ton of CDs there, yeah.
I haven't seen any CDs.
They're literally on the other side of the couch. There is a crate, and in there are just tons of CDs. Yeah, no, I bought CDs. I don't think I've bought a CD at a record store since probably 2014. Like in the last 2 years, I don't think I've bought a CD. So many great record stores have closed down in the last few years because the digital community of vinyl has really taken off. I'm very happy that Academy Records still exists, and I should probably go on record saying that I have a feeling we're going to be plugging a lot of things today, no pun intended, but a lot of stores and services, I'm not being paid by any of them. Let's just set that out there.
Was that a sexual plug?
It might have been. Academy Records is definitely one of my favorite stores in the city. There's, I think, 3 branches of Academy, Oak Street, 12th Street. There's a couple, and I usually go to the one on 12th Street, East 12th Street in the East Village, because it gets me into the Village, which is somewhere I love to be in the first place. And
you took me there once.
I did. See, you have to understand that one of the reasons I took you record shopping with me was so that you could understand how I feel whenever you take me shopping anywhere, because you know I do not enjoy shopping at all.
That is very true. I am fascinated by your ability to dig through dusty album crates for hours.
Yeah, oh, I love it.
You know you're looking for something?
Some things. See, that's the thing, to use that word many, many times. I'm never looking for a record. I'm looking for a couple hundred records, and that's kind of the fun for me. See, let's jump back. There are two types of people who get records, as I see it. You have record collectors and you have record listeners. Record collectors are people who want the really rare version or the original copy so they can basically put it in a glass case or like keep it sealed. And I don't understand that, because the point of music is to listen to it and experience it. And yeah, it's cool that you have this copy of the Grateful Dead's Blues for Allah that's still sealed, but that's like having an amazing piece of art and keeping it in your closet, as far as I'm concerned. I get records because I want to listen to them and I want to enjoy them. And yeah, so well, I am very much a record listener, yes.
Unless people are literally putting it in a frame because they just like the art. And the used piece of vinyl that they find was $5, and it's a really
neat
way to, you know,
I totally
have some
get that. Like, if you really want to have the cover from the Rolling Stones on Her Satanic Majesty's Request, which was the cool hologram cover, or actually it's Lexane or something like that. I forget what it's called. Someone will correct me. Thank you, online people. If you want to have that on the wall, awesome. But why would you spend like $70 on an original copy when you could get the same thing on, like, you know, a $10 reissue or something like that, if they ever decide to reissue that properly? But that's where the difference is that people will go out and spend an extraordinary amount of money for an original pressing of something and then put it on the wall. And I'm like, well, but wait a second. Perfect example. A guy paid over $1,000 for an original copy of John Coltrane's Giant Steps album, which is it's my favorite Coltrane record, and it's a very simple cover. It's just Coltrane playing. It's super basic. And they've done dozens of reissues of that album. So you could get the exact same thing, if we're talking about people who want the art on the wall, for, you know, like 1% of the cost.
Sure.
People want to say, oh, I have this, I have that, and then never listen to it. I really don't get it. And a good friend of mine collects like that. He wants every single copy of, you know, like the first Ramones album, let's say.
Uh-huh.
He wants every single different pressing. He wants the Portuguese pressing. He wants the Australian pressing. He wants the UK pressing. And in almost every case, the only difference is on the back, it'll say like made in Portugal or made in England or made in the United States.
Well, is it the prestige of having everything, or is it being able to sell it all later?
No, it's definitely not the latter. I don't think that most people buy vinyl with the idea of selling it later. At least in 2016, I don't think people are thinking like that. And when people were buying records, when records were the medium in the 60s and most of the 70s, I don't think people were saying, man, I'm gonna get this copy of Dylan's Tennessee Skyline so I can sell it in 30 years.
Right.
It's just not the mentality. And these days, if you can get it really, really cheap, yeah, maybe you'll say, man, you know, I'm not super into this band, but I could probably flip it.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't think that's the vast majority, especially over the last 3 years with the massive resurgence of vinyl. You're just not going to find steals anymore. You know, one of my other favorite record stores in the city, the one that you couldn't handle, is A1 Records, which is actually right down the street from the 12th Street Academy. That's at 6th Street and Avenue A. It's right by the Joe Strummer mural on the side of the Niagara, which really, I'm not going to talk about the Joe Strummer mural and how much it bothers me since they redid it. But anyway, that store, A1, I used to go there because they had the best prices in the city.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For years, A1, hands down, you could get everything you wanted. And it's not like you were ripping them off, but they were going to be $5 to $8 less than anywhere else. And then about a year ago, someone new must have come into the management there because all of their prices went up. And I don't buy there much anymore because they are now either at the same price as everywhere else, or in a lot of cases, they're higher. But A1 is also a record store I do love, and they are better for crate digging as opposed to Academy. So,
well, let's talk about that. So,
okay.
So you go into Academy, or you go into A1.
Let's go into Academy first, because that's always my first stop. I always go to Academy before I go to A1. I'm not OCD at all about it, but I always go to Academy
first. I remember this vividly. So take me into Academy. Where do you go first?
The way I go into Academy is actually the way I go into any record store when I arrive. The very first thing I will do is I will go for the new arrivals bin. And if people are going to be out there taking notes, this is the first note you should take. The absolute first thing you do when you go into any record store is go to the new arrivals bin. The reason I go to the new arrivals bin first is that's all the stuff that they've recently purchased. And obviously, recent is a very relative term. But it hasn't been organized into the other crates. And so if you want first dibs, if you want like the goods that they just got, you have to go to the new arrivals bin. And it's going to be a complete jumble. It's not in alphabetical order. It's not in genre order. It's literally like, hey, we bought these 11 records. Just put them in the crate. Then we bought these 16 records. Put them in. Then we bought these two. They're just in there. It's a mess. But I cannot tell you how many, holy crap, I can't believe they have this, moments that I have in the new arrivals bin. I buy more out of the new arrivals bin than anywhere else in any record store because it's not picked through. Or it's not picked through and it's always new. That rhymed. And
how often do they update it, though? Like once a week?
No, all the time. Like, you know, record stores, most good record stores are going to be constantly buying records. You know, people come in and say, hey, I have this stack, whatever. So It's getting updated all day, every day.
You just had a pretty good find the other week in the new arrivals bin.
I absolutely, the thing about record shopping, and you've never seen one half of this, is sometimes you find nothing. You've never seen me find nothing.
I'm not sure I want to see that day.
It sucks. I've had it happen before. And sometimes you find one record, but there are days, and they are so rare. And as someone who loves to go into record stores, it's my favorite. When it's like every single crate you go into, you find something you're looking for. And that's what happened the other week at Academy and A1. I came back with... I found a copy, a reissue of Dexter Gordon's Go album, which I absolutely adore. That's when I found that Clash, Black Market Clash 10-inch. I found a copy of Barry White's Can't Get Enough. Mm-hmm. The first Madonna record. What the heck else did I find? Oh, Parliament's Mothership Connection was in there.
One.
And that was an original pressing of Mothership Connection, the Casablanca pressing. I never see that anywhere. And it was so cool that like I pulled it out and looked at it like four or five times saying, wow. No way. I finally found it. And to me, that's one of the other reasons why I love going to record stores as opposed to just buying online.
Mm-hmm.
It's you get this, it's a little bit of a buzz, the thrill of finding that record. You know, it's kind of like playing video games with cheat codes. You know, with the cheat code, there's no challenge. You just blow through all the guys to the end and you win. But mm-hmm. if you fought through that video game, and this is probably happening because I was just playing video games, if you fight through it and you play the whole thing, it's so much more rewarding. With records, if I just point and click online and just have someone send me the record, believe me, it's awesome. I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But there's no story behind it. And it's a little bit cooler when you just stumble across it in the wild.
Right, in the dust.
Yeah, in the dust. Academy is not dusty.
That's true. I couldn't handle A1 because it was way too dusty for me.
And that's kind of the difference. And it's not a slam on that store at all. They are a very different breed of record store than Academy.
Sure.
The amount of music that they have is far... They have more records at A1. It's not as curated. They will buy anything at mm-hmm. A1. And so you really have to commit to go there. And that's why I often go there second, because I know it's going to exhaust me.
Right.
I'm probably not going to make it through there.
So record buying fatigue, is this a thing?
Record buying fatigue is absolutely a thing. And I'm usually good in the warmer weather because, you know, I mean, I overheat very easily, as you know. In the warmer weather, I'm usually good for about 90 minutes of record shopping, depending on where I go. But it's hard for me to be in any single store for more than an hour.
I know it
just gets exhausting. And by that point also, I've picked through most of what I'm going to look at, because after I go to the new arrivals bin, you know, like I said, I'm never looking for one record. I'm always looking for like 100, 150 records in my head. After the new arrivals bin, there are a handful of places that I will instinctively go because there are certain albums that I'm always looking for.
Sure.
Or certain groups that I'm always looking to find music by. So I will check them out first. And a lot of these records I know I'm never going to find. There are about a dozen records that are my Holy Grail albums that I know I will never find anywhere because they're either so expensive that I'm not going to let myself pay for them. They're so rare for one reason or another. You know, it was a small pressing. It was so long ago, you know, or it's one of these amazing records that people just never give up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll always go look just for the humor that, you know, maybe one day I'm going to just find a copy of Morphine's Yes album in the wild. It'll because see, during the 90s, for the most part, some people were still pressing their stuff to record, but they were doing it in such small amounts and it was so impossible to find. You can't, you know, they exist. You know, any great album from the 90s almost, and we're also talking about, let's call it until 96, they're out there on record. They exist, but they're really hard to find. And then they're going to be really, really, really expensive. You're talking $80 to $200.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Somewhere in there. I mean, I know the Morphine record often goes for about $90. You know, the other week I finally found someone who had a good copy of Tori Amos's Boys for Pele, and I treated myself, and that was a lot of money. And I'm always looking for those because those were kind of my youth, and they're a very specific time. So, you know, I'll go into the genre crates and I'll look under Tori Amos, and I'll go over to Tom Waits and see what's there, because I can always buy more Tom Waits stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll look at Morphine, and I'll go over to The Clash, and I'll look at The Stooges, And, you know, I'm also always looking for a copy. Oh, my. It drove me nuts. The other week, I was in Academy. Okay. I need a moment. So the genre bins are what they sound like. It's once you're done with the new arrivals, you know, they're just, they're alphabetical by genre.
Yeah.
And some stores, every store is going to have their specialty. You know, like I said, with other music, they were good at having kind of out there weirdo stuff.
Yeah.
Some stores are going to specialize in electronica or hip hop or metal or folk or blues. Everyone will have some of everything, but each store, they have something they're a little bit better at buying than other stores. So I'm in Academy. And I'm going through the jazz bins. And I look over, and the guy next to me has a copy of the Ella Fitzgerald Louis Armstrong album, Ella and Louis, which extraordinary recording.
So good.
And I said to him, I said, that's an awesome record. He goes, yeah. He goes, you never see it. I'm like, yeah, I know. I said, was it in the new arrivals? He goes, no, it actually made it into the genre bins. And I was like,
damn it.
I was so pissed. And I was basically stalking the guy for the rest of the time he was in the store. Like, I was just kind of, wherever I was in the store, I had an eye on him in case he decided to not buy that record. Because the second he was going to put it back into a bin, I was going to run and get it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a super rare record, but I haven't seen one in forever, and I want it. And so, you know, you get these weird interactions, and, you know, you find yourself, like I said, kind of friendly stalking people to kind of see. And you'll watch other people and see what they're pulling out of bins. And sometimes you're like, oh man, like how have I not remembered that I want, you know, that band? And it can really be inspiring. So
this is so different from clothing shopping with you.
Yes. It's
so different. You've got an hour to 2 hour threshold on record buying and about a 15 minute threshold on buying pants. And
if we
know we're buying pants and we see a shirt and I'm like, ooh, the shirt, you're like, keep on track.
We're here to get pants.
Yeah.
Let's get the pants.
So
leave.
Funny.
Let's get the pants. You're right. It is two completely different experiences. but you know, that really is my process. Once I'm done with the new arrivals bin, I will go over to the different genres then, and I'll just kind of go through them. And that's with what you were saying is with exhaustion, it definitely happens. You know, some days I'm feeling more like I want to look in the rock section and I'll go through all of those, you know, and I might, there are two ways to deal with the genre bins. One of them is the way I do it. And the other is the way that actually makes sense.
Okay.
The way that actually makes sense is start at one side of the store and go around the store. You know, so that you know you've hit everything, or at least everything you're interested in. Because most record stores are going to be pretty well labeled in terms of genre and letter. So, you know, if you're someone who's not really into jazz, you don't have to look in the jazz section. But see, the way I do it, because it's a little bit of ADHD, is I'll go, you know, once I'm done with the new arrivals, at Academy, I usually step on 12th Street, I usually step directly to the right, because that's where their punk and metal records are. And they don't have a ton there, but man, they usually have some really, really good stuff there. And so I'll just randomly go through them. And it's just, that's just habit. But then, and in most other stores, I'll start at like rock under A and skip over Aerosmith and AC/DC. And just kind of, not that I don't love them, but I will never grab those on vinyl. It's just not a band I'm going to spin. But, and usually I will make it to C or D. And then I'll get bored and I'll go somewhere else in the store and come back.
Yeah.
So
this sounds oddly like the way that you alphabetize your collection.
What's wrong with how I alphabetize my collection?
Oh my God, this is one of the most annoying things I've ever seen.
It makes sense. Oh, because like Tori Amos is under T and Tom Waits is under W.
Yeah. What is that?
It's just, that's where I look for them. I think of Tori and I think of Waits.
But you don't think that anyone else in this household may want to look for an album?
Just learn my system. I'm not asking for much. I'm just saying, look, you know, some things, you know, like Joe Strummer is under J, but Johnny Cash is under C.
Yeah, it's terribly annoying, but it's a quirk I love about you.
Exactly. You need to realize how my brain thinks when it thinks about music. I mean, you know, I get it. Steve Poltz is under P, but Stevie Wonder is under S.
Oh my God. You have your own like QWERTY keyboard.
I do. You know what? It's terrible. And part of it is that. And part of it is, like I said, that's where my brain makes sense.
Okay.
It just does. But, you know, so I'll look like A through C or D, and then I'll jump over and I'll look through like the electronic stuff for a little while, and I'll just kind of jump back and forth. But I also rarely make it through an entire store. And especially, you saw A1 Records. They have so much music in there. It's, you would have to spend probably 4 or 5 hours to go through every single bin because they have everything you can see at like chest level. Mm-hmm. And then under it, they've got bins everywhere. That place, they've got a lot of records. And that's what I mean, where a lot of stores will just buy and buy and buy.
Yeah.
Where Academy curates, and that's a lot of the time why I prefer Academy, because it doesn't take as long, because they have, I don't want to say they have higher standards. They have different standards. They have a different approach to what they want their store to be.
Sure.
So.
Well, it sounds like you're probably less inclined to get fatigue in that store than you are in A1.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say there's a third kind of store, and I'm not going to call them out because I don't want to rip on them. There is a store near Union Square here in New York City.
Yeah.
And I struggle with that store more than any record store I ever have in my life, because I believe that the person who owns it is a huge collector, because he knows the exact price to put everything at.
Yeah.
And usually the prices are a little too high if he's actually looking to sell. That's where I came across the holy grail that I walked away from, which was he had a perfect condition copy of the UK pressing of the first Clash record. And it was a, you know, I looked at the etching in the runout so I could see what they etched in, and it was a very first pressing, one of the first 5,000 copies of that album pressed.
Wow.
Which is one of my holy grail records, because that is one of my three favorite albums ever. But he just, you know, I had a conversation with him, and he told me the price, and I said, so what are you really looking to sell this for? And he said, that's the price I want. And I said, no one's ever going to buy it for that price. And he started talking to me about, you know, what it was and how special. I said, this is one of my three favorite albums ever. I said, no offense, I know more about this record than you do. I said, I'm the person who would buy this album.
Right.
I am your customer for this exact record. And I'm telling you, as the person looking for this specific aversion, you're over $100 too high.
Over $100.
And so,
wow.
You know, it sucks because I really want that, but I wasn't going to pay his price. And there are places like that who...
Well, also because you're going to play it.
And that's the other thing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to play it. I'm not looking to put that up on the wall.
Right.
And that is, again, why I'm a collector, or I'm a listener, not a collector. I want to play an original version. And you don't have the same concerns with destroying vinyl that you did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, because the you know, the needle on the actual turntable is so much better. The platters are better. Everything's so much better made, mm-hmm. that you're not having as much damage done to the record. I'm not saying, you know, if you play a record 5,000 times on a newer record player, that it's not going to sound terrible, you know, that it's not going to show signs of wear, but it's night and day compared to what it used to be. And at the same time, one of the biggest things you need to know about record shopping is how much is something actually worth, and how much are you willing to actually pay for it? Because,
sure.
You know, like I said, with that Clash record, I'd pay $80 for it.
Mm-hmm.
I might, if it was a really beautiful copy, like the copy he had, I'd pay $100. You know,
okay.
Just because that record means so much to me.
Well, is there a threshold? Like, do you, is there something that you can tell people, like, this is the price where you are getting ripped off for something, or is it all relative?
It's a little bit of both. I use discogs.com, and I use that for many, many reasons. Again, this is not a paid advertisement. I'm just telling you what I use.
Mm-hmm.
I use Discogs because, first off, I've cataloged my collection there, and I can keep track of it. And it's basic enough that you're just like, I have Simon and Garfunkel's Concert in the Park on vinyl. And you click it, and it puts it in your collection. If you want to go and say, I have the 1983 repressing on whatever record label, and here are the etchings in the runout, you can get that. You can get that granular as well. It also, you can say, you know, I have a want list there.
Yeah,
which you're no doubt familiar with.
It's one of the greatest things you've done,
yes.
In terms of gift giving,
and it in that gives you not necessarily the price you should be paying, but it says, you know, there are 43 people on our website advertising it for sale, and it's a mixture of individuals and businesses, and here's the average price. So it at least gives you a starting point, so that if you're looking to buy this first pressing of the Clash, you know, even better. Like I said, I splurged on that copy of Tori Amos's Boys for Pele the other week.
Yeah.
And I've been watching that record not sell because nobody's buying it for 2 or 3 years now. And on average, you're going to pay somewhere between $60 and $100 for it. And it's double vinyl, and it's clear, and it's very low press, you know, very low number were pressed. And so I finally found someone where I thought the price was right. I was able to compare it there online mm-hmm. to the other sellers and say, this is, you know, I could pay a little less for it for a little bit worse condition, or I could pay a little bit more, you know, if I want pristine and want it sealed. But I said, I don't need it sealed if it plays fine because I'm going to play it.
Right.
So.
But that gives you a reference yes. when you are in the store.
Yep.
You can look on Discogs and see what the average price
is. Yeah, they have,
an
app now that I use. They finally put out the Android app, so I'm really, really happy about that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can just pull it up in the store and say, you know, like, okay, cash is at Folsom Prison. You know what? On average, I can get it online for $12. I'm not going to pay $20 here.
Yes.
I'll pay $15 in the store because, you know, it's not like I'm looking at that saying, I won't pay more than this. With that example, if I can just pick it up physically in the store and have the find on it, you mm-hmm. know, and know where I got it, I don't mind paying an extra $3, $4, $5. Also because I'm supporting a local record store and I'm huge on that. We, you know, they're all going out of business in New York City because the rent is too damn high and not enough people are shopping. So, you know, I don't mind paying a couple dollars extra to support my local record store. But again, if I can find it online for 12, I'm not going to pay 20.
Fair enough.
I'm just not.
Fair enough. Now, the last time that, I went record shopping with you.
I'm sorry, the only time?
The only time.
The only time that you survived?
The only time that I survived record shopping
yeah.
with you. I had two total album fails.
You did. I love you, but I didn't want to say it in the moment because
well,
I was looking at these records.
You were being very encouraging.
I was looking at these records and I was like, okay. these are artists I've never heard you even remotely show interest
and
in.
And so this is something I'd really like to talk about with
okay.
you because... You know, going through this process, I thought it's great that I found, you know, Al Green in here and like
yep.
I'm super excited, but I want to.
That was not the record we're referring to. We should just mention that.
No,
that,
no.
You know,
I'm
when,
just,
you,
I'm
when
saying,
you picked up Al Green, Still in Love with You. We knew
I was
we
very
were
excited about that.
Yeah.
And I knew what I was getting
exactly
with that. But I thought I would try some artists I'd never heard of, mm-hmm. you know, Jen Chapin. Her album called Reckoning and Betty Davis, not the Betty Davis that anyone is thinking of, but the Betty Davis who was married to Miles Davis mm-hmm. and her album Is It Love or Desire, which was a really cool album cover.
Yeah. See, when you that was the one that I was like, that's a really obscure record.
Well, it yeah, because it didn't exist. Like it was released uh-huh. years and years
yeah.
after it was recorded.
Yeah.
And I'm reading the hype sticker and I'm like, this is so cool.
So they got you with the hype sticker.
They totally did. And both of these albums were completely sealed. Not that I would have pulled them out of their sleeves anyway, because I felt too uncomfortable to do that.
Uh-huh. Well, it was a sealed record. It's you couldn't have because
no,
it was
no,
sealed.
But I'm saying if it weren't sealed,
yeah.
I probably wouldn't have because I felt so weird about pulling Ooh. Records out of their covers
well,
in the
see,
store.
Here's, okay. See, this is where, you know, you should have just said something. But at a record store, it is beyond commonplace for used records. If it is not sealed, we are working in an, you know, what I'm going to say is only if it's not sealed. If you unseal a record in a store,
there are going to be problems.
Have mercy on your soul. If it's a used record, you are totally encouraged to take it out and check it out. I will never, ever buy a used record without at least taking it out to take, just give it a cursory glance. That's a word now.
You want to say that over again?
No, I'm going to go with it. Just to make sure that there are no huge scratches on it or anything. Most record stores are going to do their due diligence and check the record before they buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But you should always just, you know, take it out, have a quick look. You know, if it's an older album, you may want to see if the inserts are still in there. You know, like a band like the Rolling Stones, again, they used to put so much cool stuff, like extras,
yeah.
inside of their albums. Like Exile on Main Street, they put postcards, like they made these postcards, and the paper sleeve, not the actual album. The paper sleeve would always be cool stuff. The one for Let It Bleed is this really neat lavender, and it's got all this writing on it. So, you know, that can make a difference for me, and it's usually just a bonus. But the other thing is, any record store worth their weight is also going to have at least one or two record players in the store. So
yeah.
you can take the album over, put the needle on it, and make sure it sounds good. Because that's where
yeah.
you're going to find out, you know, does it have a lot of surface noise? Are there skips that I can't see? Or if you're going to go in this crazy idea that you had and just buy random stuff, see if you even like it. So, you know.
Well, I know. Look, I was drawn to these due to the album art and the
uh-huh.
hype stickers. I know that sounds super dumb,
yeah.
but I had some cool discoveries that way back in the day when I was buying CDs.
Right. Well, when you were buying CDs, it was so much different, though.
That's the thing. Like, you know, this doesn't really seem to be an activity cut out for people who are just browsing for new music.
No, I don't think it is. Well, and here's the thing.
You kind of have to, this assumes that you are buying albums that you know and love and want a physical copy of.
Mostly. You have to understand that the music industry is so much different in 2016 than it was, let's call it 1994.
Mm-hmm.
The way that artists make albums is a completely different approach and process. This is now a market where people are looking to sell on iTunes. It's that whole singles market versus album market.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of a record is going to go a lot lower. This applies to neither of the albums that you did a blind buy on. But the culture has changed. And I don't risk buying as many records from bands that I don't know yet. And that's actually one of the reasons I used to go to other music all the time, strangely enough. It just occurred to me. They would have amazing write-ups on all the music there, and I always trusted what the staff said. But I was only buying CDs there because CDs are so much more of a... they don't take up as much space. They're more of a disposable medium than a record. A record is a commitment.
Yeah.
And... so I think, you know, with CDs, you could be a little bit more adventurous. And certainly with tapes, like when you used to be able to buy a cassette single, like who cared?
Exactly.
You know, it didn't matter. It was definitely a disposable culture. But with records, yeah, I don't really do the blind buy.
Well, I learned my lesson there because now I've got these two albums that were categorically.
We have these two albums
that were, you know, pretty horrible. And I feel stuck with them. So, you know, can I sell them back to Academy?
I mean, you can. They're going to probably not give you all that much.
Yeah, probably not. But
here's
I
the thing,
could, right?
Here's another tip. What you could have done in that situation is talk to the people at the register. You know, like, I don't naturally go in and say, hey, guys, I'm looking for, like, I understand that a lot of people think it's crazy that I don't walk into a record store and say, hey, I'm looking for these seven albums. Do you have them?
Right.
I get it. And you can do that if you really want to piss off the clerk. But again, I like the adventure of finding it. However, it doesn't hurt to ask. Like if I went up and said, hey, man, do you know anyone who might have a copy of Morphine's Yes on vinyl? They might have it at another store. They might be able to order it. But also, if you're going to go into your local record store enough, build up that rapport with them. Get to know them. And at least let them get to know you. You know, you don't have to buy them dinner and shake hands with them. But if they see you frequently, some cool things can happen other than enjoying going to the record store a lot more. Christian. You know, my best buddy. He's been on the podcast a few times.
Christian.
His favorite local record store, I'm going to speak on his behalf, is Spoonful Records in Columbus. I'm pretty sure that's his favorite. It's either that or Magnolia Thunder Pussy, which is an amazing name for a record
store.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I love the record stores in Columbus. They're some of my favorites. Used Kids, all of them. And I'm pretty sure it's at Spoonful, because he's there so often. Every once in a while, they'll set aside a record because they know he'll come in the next week or so for him. Like, you know, they had someone traded in a really rare Pearl Jam fan club Christmas single. And they know how he's just like a massive Pearl Jam fan.
Yeah.
And they set it aside so the next time he came in, he could have first shot at it.
That's pretty cool.
And it's one of those cool things that can happen if the people at the record store know you well enough. You can get cool moments like that. And again, it makes it more fun because you know the people there. But getting back to the original point, you can also go up to most people in record stores and say, hey, I'm looking for something new. I'm really into, you know, early Nine Inch Nails, The Gun Club, and Husker Du. And, you know, and see what they say. If it's a good record
store. So you're
really
relying on the staff there to be pretty knowledgeable.
If you want. It's just another approach.
I worked at Sam Goody when I was about 16 years old.
It was a different musical
culture. That would never
have
worked.
And you were working at this just chain store, you know, where they would just hire anyone to fill a time shift.
Oh, it was just anyone?
Anyone. Didn't matter. Didn't matter who it was.
Yeah.
But at a record store, you also need to know stuff because you're also taking trade-ins. And you need to be able to judge the condition and know if it's something that sells. Sure, they have a computer matrix, all that, and I'm sure most record stores use something to the equivalent of Discogs, but it's a different culture there. And you know, I like to get to know the people at the record store I work at.
Well, so you know, the other thing about going through the bins was, again, looking at the hype stickers, looking at the, you know, heavyweight vinyl. And this is something that's come up a few times recently where we've been home and listening to something that was on heavyweight and you're
180
like
180 gram vinyl.
The needle's dragging. I was like,
yeah,
what?
I have issue with this last few years, this big movement that everything has to be on what they're calling 180 gram audiophile vinyl.
Sure.
Audiophile is someone's opinion. 180 gram, that's fact. But I'm not a huge fan of 180 gram vinyl.
Tell me why, Joel.
I will tell you why, Dara. I like it because it's more durable, in theory. And I like it because it feels more significant in your hand.
Yes.
But I can't hear a difference. You know, the whole audio file quality and stuff, that's more to do with the mix and how it was pressed as opposed to the actual medium that mm-hmm. it's on. You know, you look back at classic records like my copy of Lady Soul by Aretha Franklin, for mm-hmm. instance. That is on normal freaking vinyl. And that record is 40 years old. And it still sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And that's an original copy. And one of the problems is on a lot of record players, especially older ones, when you're spinning 180 gram vinyl, when you get into kind of the last few tracks, so you're near the center of the record,
yeah.
you're going to hear it slowing down because the record player just can't keep up because that little difference in weight, especially with older record players, can cause all sorts of problems.
But it's causing a problem with our record player, yes. and it's new.
It's the same idea, you know, and granted, that's a very nerdy record player that I have. But I am not a supporter of 180 gram vinyl. I'm not.
It's good to know.
It's a selling point, and I'm sure that, you know, in the industry you're in, you hear a lot of people trying to upsell you to the 180 gram vinyl for stuff you guys are pressing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worth it. It's a marketing thing to me and little more than that. Granted, we've seen really bad vinyl in existence, like in the mid to late 70s during the oil crisis, when they started promoting FlexiDisc, which if you guys don't know what FlexiDisc is, you'll buy them and they're just flimsy. Like you can hold it in your hand and just like flop it back and forth. It's much thinner and low grade vinyl.
They used
and
to be in the back of Highlights magazine.
You could find them in the, yes. And McDonald's did a promotion in the 80s where like, I think they put the record into people's newspapers. That was super flexy, you know, like really crappy. But you will find, like I said, in the mid to late 70s, vinyl that feels really thin and almost bendable. It's because of the oil crisis, because vinyl was so expensive to make. You will hear that. That is inferior. You can hear the sound on it. The sound quality is poor. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're dealing with a lot of colored vinyl throughout the 80s and the 90s, until like 6 years ago, they hadn't really figured out how to make colored vinyl that sounded good. It'll be really, really thin. The fidelity is very poor. You know, even, I hate to say it, that copy of Boys for Pele that I bought, and I knew this going into it, it's clear vinyl.
Yeah.
So it's colored clear.
Yeah.
And the fidelity is pretty low. But I knew that going into it.
I thought there was no difference now. Or are you saying it was from the 90s?
Right,
and
that
that's
was
why?
That was pressed in the 90s.
Gotcha.
Nowadays, you know, I mean, I have green, blue, purple, all this stuff,
all
this
the
different
colors
vinyl,
of the rainbow.
And most of it, you know, 90% of it is really, really good. It doesn't make a difference. But, you know, there's still going to be pressings out there. You know, I know when they, strangely enough, when they did the Record Store Day re-release of the first Clash record in 2012 or 2013, that was a very poor pressing. The colored vinyl, for some reason, I don't know what they did, it sounds like crap. It just does. Another problem with fidelity that I got caught up in the other day was when I found that copy of Miriam Makeba's Pata Pata album.
Yes, so good.
A record I've always been looking for because I love it, and you weren't there because I was shopping alone. You're welcome. It's a Venezuelan copy, and I dig it because the original sticker from the store in Caracas is still on the record. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's such a neat piece of history, and it's an original. It's from like, I think it's from like 1968 or something, or 69 it was purchased. So I was really, really hyped because not only did I have a copy of Pata Pata on vinyl finally, but I had this Venezuelan pressing, and I brought it home and I put it on and you were here.
Yeah.
And it just sounds horrible because either the vinyl, either it's bad vinyl or they probably more likely took it from a really bad mastering of the album, because in that time in the 60s, and even into the 70s, a lot of the international pressings were kind of bootleg.
Got it.
And so they were pulling them from like a recording of the original. And it just sounds bad. Now, I'm going to keep that because that's a cool thing to have, the Venezuelan pressing of Pata Pata. But I'll never spin it because it sounds like crap. So sometimes you do the best you can to have something cool and you're still going to end up getting bit in the ass.
Okay, so now I know we don't have to appeal to audiophiles like you with 180 gram.
No, I will
vinyl.
Say though, man, a good hype sticker goes a long way with me.
Love the hype sticker.
I love hype stickers, and there are people in the community who despise them. I love hype stickers. One of the reasons I bought that copy of Lady Soul is because it has the hype sticker advertising like Chain of Fools and another song on there. But I really like that. Or on my copy of the Ruts album, The Crack, where it says, pay like $3.99, don't pay more.
Mm-hmm.
I dig that. It's such a sign of the time that was made in. But yeah, I'm a fan of the hype sticker. And it really is hit or miss for me. Sometimes if there's a sticker on the actual cover, it'll piss me off because I won't like where they placed it,
yeah.
You know, and I'll be like, you're covering up this great part. But I do enjoy a very well-placed hype sticker.
So, Joel, this has been a...
That's it? I want to talk about records for like another few hours.
Well, there's always next week.
I mean, no, now you maybe perhaps understand a little more how and why I buy what I buy and kind of the process, you know.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like this is kind of a club that you're in? Do you feel like there are a lot of people who do this the same way?
I don't know if they do it the same way, but I think there's definitely a community amongst vinyl heads, you know, people who really love vinyl. And that's where things like Record Club come from, mm-hmm. where, you know, we all get together and we listen to a record because listening to records is such a more communal thing than the way people listen to music these days. So I definitely think there's kind of a cult of vinyl.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do feel like so much of it is about the physicality of it,
mm-hmm.
and connecting with the art and the liner notes and the artist, as opposed to a tiny digital file with a little thumbnail on your phone or iPod or whatever. I certainly know that I really cannot recall like a recent album cover,
mm-hmm.
of pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped. Like, once I stopped buying physical albums, it's like my brain stopped growing in that direction. Once I started streaming and downloading music, because I'm not physically actively touching and feeling the album while I'm listening to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of something that I'm doing while I'm doing other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm, not paying attention. So that's something
that's kind of the point of what we do at the end of every episode. With our listening assignment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's exactly right on. I think it's hilarious when I see artists making these extraordinary album covers in 2016 that are going to be, you know, like 76 by 76 pixels for most people.
Yeah.
You know, like the one that just popped into my mind is Drake's Views, which is him sitting at the top of, it used to be called the CN Tower in Toronto. I'm sure another company has the naming rights to it now. I haven't been to Toronto since the 80s. So it's just this really wide shot of it. And I'm just like, that's cool and all, but nobody's going to actually be able to see that. Or Justin Timberlake's 2020 experience was, mm-hmm. a gorgeously done cover, both volume one and volume two. Most people never get to see it because it's so small and so condensed. And yeah, I think really vinyl, it's about the experience, and it's not an exclusive club. I want to make sure I say that. It's not an exclusive or an elitist club, and you don't need to know more about music than everyone else. You just have to want to listen to a record. And you know what? You know what? We were going to do it this week. Next week, I think I'm going to cover kind of how to buy a stereo.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what actually excludes a lot of people from getting into vinyls. They feel like you have to be an audiophile to buy a stereo. Mm-hmm.
Or you just need to marry someone who knows how to put a stereo together.
I can plug properly. Things in with the best of them. My thanks again to Dara for taking that conversation in ways I didn't initially plan for, and all in good ways, and of course for letting my record collection continue to take up more and more of our living room. Hit me up on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and @TheDailyGuru, and let me know what your favorite record store is and what are your buying habits. Now, before we wrap the episode, I do, of course, have your weekly Ear Fuel listening assignment. For those of you new to the podcast, each week I assign an album to listen to, beginning to end, without any distractions or interruptions. It stems from the fact that these days, as Dara mentioned, music has become kind of relegated to a background task. You're at the gym, you're at work, you're driving, whatever. And this assignment is about taking some time each week to consciously listen to music for the sake of the music. This week, since it came up a few times, your assignment is Aretha Franklin's unparalleled 1968 album, Lady Soul. Now let's get this out of the way. Aretha Franklin is the greatest female soul singer ever, period, point blank. And this record is by far her crowning achievement. She's got it all. Killer voice, an extraordinary presence, and on this record, a band bringing more groove than you can handle. Now seriously, before we even get to Aretha, let's talk about the lineup on this album. It was engineered by Tom Dowd and Jerry Wexler, two names you should know, but it featured the one and only King Curtis leading her backing band. You have Joe South and Bobby Womack on guitar, and the backing vocals are actually done by Aretha's real-life sisters. Oh, there's also one other performer, and he went uncredited on the first few pressings of this album. He's featured on guitar on the song Good to Me as I Am to You, and his name is Eric Clapton. Yeah, Eric Clapton rounds up the musical lineup here. It's tough to top, seriously. Anyway, on to the songs. The big hits are here in the form of Chain of Fools and Natural Woman, but for me, it's all about Money Won't Change You, Good to Me as I Am to You, and Ain't No Way. I mean, there's not a bad second anywhere on here, but those are probably my three favorites. This record, though, it gets deep in the truest sense of soul on People Get Ready. Oh, man. But then it grooves like crazy all over the place. It's the ideal intersection between the classic sounds of soul and what would become that kind of funk soul movement of the next few years that, hey, guess what? Eventually that leads to disco, for better or for worse. But honestly, it's all about Aretha's performance. You can't say enough about it, as it's truly in a class all its own. She can bring the most powerful notes anywhere on the musical scale, and yet it never seems like she's overdoing things. It's completely natural and unforced, and there are just so many moments here that will leave you speechless. What you experience from beginning to end is a performer giving themselves completely to the music and really feeling out where the notes should fall. Look, there's a reason she won the Grammy Award for Best R&B Vocalist for 8 consecutive years, and this record kind of tells you all you need to know. This is also a record that knows how to leave you wanting more, clocking in at just shy of a half hour, so as soon as it ends, no other voice can compare, so you have to spin it again, and it's great. Lady Soul overflows with raw talent and stunning sonic beauty, and it's just one of those records you can't play enough times. It never ages, and if somehow you don't know every second of this record by now, you need to change that right now. Thank me later. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll discuss how to build out an amazing stereo system at any price point so you can enjoy all of your music to the max. As always, the podcast is available in the iTunes and Google Play stores and at getearfuel.com. That is your weekly Ear Fuel. Share and enjoy.